seed of proliferation, but if God is melded into an inharmonic whole, to an inharmonic whole, consciousness has plagued us and we cannot shake it, though we think we're in control. Though we think we're
Welcome back, everybody. This is Pursuit of Knowledge, episode probably number 3. You probably heard us a little earlier. We were out on the back porch. We were playing some games. Kira stomped my ass.
Twice.
Consecutively. Really bad. My Merfolk deck was now up to the challenge of things like 5-4 Bloodbraid Elves that flipped over 4-5s and such. It was a bad time.
I thought it was a fun time.
It was a fun time, but not in the traditional way. It was fun because I finally could see the joy in her eyes when she cascades off the Bloodbraid Elf into, you know, something that's fun and, yeah. Anyway, it was good, but my deck did not put up quite the showing that I was hoping it was. It was just a silly deck that I threw together anyway. It was Tribal Merfolk in Standard, which I missed Silver Gill Adept and Barrow Reachery, that's for damn sure. But anyway, this is Pursuit of Knowledge. If you haven't listened to us before, why are you listening to us now? But I hope you are anyway, or even better that you listened to us before. This is the podcast where I take someone who just weeks ago was a complete noob and try to teach her how to not suck at magic. So say hi.
Hi.
That's Kira. I'm Steve, just in case you forgot. So that's what we do on the podcast. It's episode 3.
We're not outside anymore.
Three and a half. We're not outside anymore. We are now in my bedroom because the rest of my house is very noisy and or small. In just these 3 weeks or thereabouts, Kira has gone from knowing nothing and never really played much of any of the games to being able to make decisions on when to attack and the order to tap things and, you know, all kinds of good stuff like that. So today we're going to talk a little bit about Kira's deck, why she made it, the process we went through with the cards that are in it. We'll talk about a couple things that came up from the issues that happened during the games that we played with it so far. And then there are a couple things that, like, broader subjects that came up when we were talking about it, which are playing to your outs and tournament etiquette, because Kira's homework assignment this week is to go to FNM tomorrow.
I'm scared and I don't want to go.
I keep telling her that it'll be fine. it'll be fine. Our FNM is mostly populated with a bunch of high school kids. She is already substantially better than, I am sure. Even though she's played like 10 games total in her life, probably we're up to at this point, maybe roughly thereabouts.
Yeah, probably.
So, just a couple other things on the Magic front. I finally settled on my deck for the next several, for this whole Standard season. I'm going to try to play Mythic. Hopefully ROE doesn't mess it up too bad, but we now have the complete Rise of the Eldrazi spoiler, and it doesn't look like anything is screwing it up too bad, except for Linvala, Guardian of Silence. If you haven't seen her, she's 2WW for a legendary 3/4 flying angel. And while she's in play, your opponents can't use activated abilities on their creatures, including mana abilities. How stupid is that shit? Which means it basically screws over entirely, you know, the Reliquary and Birds of Paradise and Noble Hierarch and all the fun things that I get to use with Mythic. But I am pretty safe and contented in the fact that I don't think anyone's actually going to run her. So I actually pumped down the money to build the deck on Modo, which hurt my wallet a bit, but whatever, I wanted to get the practice in. So that's going to be my plan, hopefully, for regional qualifiers or national qualifiers, whatever the hell they call them now, and the GP that's coming up in D.C. in a month.
It's not really in D.C.
It's not really in D.C. In Chantilly, Virginia, stunning downtown Chantilly, Virginia, they have an airport, and I'm sure there's an Applebee's.
Oh, man. If they have a Denny's,
maybe even a Friday's,
listen,
or a Denny's.
If they have a Denny's, maybe I'll come with you.
Okay, well, check it out.
You hold me to that, all right?
I will.
But I won't play. I'll just stand around and look good.
We'll see how good. We'll see how well FNM goes tomorrow.
Poorly. That's my prediction.
But yes, that's what I'm going to ride the rest of the way. And do you have any other magic or any other sort of news? Whatever. Mm. This is our show. We can talk about whatever the hell we want to, honestly. Mm.
It's not really in D.C.
I know.
What about a magic deck box belt holster?
Like, you like that better than the bandolier?
Well, see, that's what Chris said, too, but I think both are possible. Like,
yeah,
they'd
both be fine.
Might, like, I don't know that I'm going to do a whole belt, because then it'd be, like, a size-fitting issue. But if it was, like, a clip, like a cell phone clip or something, But do you think that that would be nice? It's been something I've been tossing around today because I've been carting my little box, and then I thought, I wish I could slip this on my belt. Except I don't wear a belt, but...
Well, you can still belt loops.
Yeah.
I stick by somebody, I guess it wasn't Smoker that mentioned, somebody came up with the idea.
Chris said the bandolier.
A deck box bandolier, which is an awesome, awesome, awesome idea, but...
He was expanding upon the idea on the way over here. He said that there could be, like, a slot for your deck box and your...
Dice bag.
Yeah, perhaps. Like dice and like a pen and like, you
notebook.
Know, yeah, stuff like that,
notebooks
which I guess that would be a pretty good idea.
Yeah, it would. As for a belt clip one, I think those guys who wear belt clips for their cell phones are like the lamest thing I've ever seen in my entire existence, and I've seen some lame stuff, so I don't know that I could bring myself to do it. But considering how many people actually wear those stupid little cell phone belt clips, I think you could probably find a...
Well, what if I just sold it as, like, an accessory? You could buy the clip to put on your already deck box that I already sold you. Or it could be, like, if I have a... my plan would be to have a lot of options that people can custom and then, you know, be like, here's the options for, you know, like, closure type and, like, sideways or upright and, you know, belt clip or no.
Right. Well, I guess I imagine a lot of people probably would use... I mean, you are talking about people play Magic the Gathering for fun here, so, I mean, we're not the most suave of all, by and large, so I could see quite a few of them being the cell phone belt clip kind of guys, and therefore might even be the deck box belt clip kind of guys, but me, personally, not my cup of tea.
Gotcha.
But you've had a lot of good ideas, so I hope, Lisa, we can let people know the website or something where they could...
Well, I did buy some things to start working on it. And I did move the sewing machine from my car to the house, so that's a step in the right direction.
Very good.
Hopefully
there you go. Keep an ear open, people, because pretty soon there's going to be a new full set deck of boxes out there. Move over Ultra Pro, and no one else makes deck boxes, so Ultra Pro, I suppose. I don't know. Who's the guys that make the magnetic ones? Ion? I think it's called Ion.
What about those ones I sent you on the internet? You know, the wooden
ones? Well, yeah, but they're just, like, okay. Well,
That's all I'll be.
Right. I meant, like, a big company, you know, like, the Microsoft of deck boxes is Ultra Pro, and nobody else really gives them much of a run for their money.
But, yeah, I sure did sidetrack us. Anyway.
It's okay. It was tangentially Magic-related.
Yes.
Okay, so, your deck.
Yeah. It's a Christmas deck.
That's a Christmas deck, which is also known as Gruul. As you've seen, I put that here on the outline.
I do see that.
The 10 in Ravnica. I think I've explained this to you before, but in Ravnica block there were 10 guilds, one for each of the two color combinations. And so to this day, you'll often hear people refer to two color combinations by their Ravnica guild name, even though, like, within the official bit of the game that hasn't been referenced in, like, 4 years. But, like, a red-green deck is a cool deck, and a blue-red deck is a busy deck, and...
I think I'll stick with Christmas.
Right, well, that's fine, too. But you might hear it, so it's good to try to keep in mind. So, it is a Christmas deck. Anything else you want to expound upon about it?
It's got a lot of elves.
It does have a lot of elves. One of the things...
They work out well for me because of all that guy who does that stuff. And that lady who does that stuff.
She's referring there to Elvish Archdruid and Nissa Ravain. The names will come later, I certainly
hope. I don't even know who you guys are half the time. Like, you know, the tall one.
The genesis of the deck was, after we talked about basic deck types before, if you hear some skittering, it's just my guinea pigs, don't worry over much. We talked about, in a previous episode, deck types, you know, aggro versus control versus combo and so forth, and what the colors did. And so using this information, Kira decided that she wanted to definitely play green, because she has a lot of fun tapping forests or sidewaysing trees. So, and I asked her if she wanted to do mono or splash color, and we came to the conclusion that she wanted the splash red. So, at that point, I said that the two cards that I think she absolutely needs to play if you're playing some sort of red-green aggressive deck are Lightning Bolt, for obvious reasons, if you know anything about, you know, Lightning Bolt and Bloodbraid Elf, which, same deal. So I pointed those to her, and I said that I think those should be the two, like, anchors, cornerstones of the deck, and from there we could start to expand. At which point, we went to Gatherer Search, and we looked for all the creatures that were red. standard legal, and we came down with a good number of guys, some of which I talked you through why it was good to dismiss them immediately. I think we basically immediately dismissed ball lighting because it was going to be more of a green-based deck. So getting the triple red was going to be really difficult. But some stuff that she brought up that I thought was a really good idea. Remember the spider?
I do remember. I liked him a lot.
Yeah, he's I can't even for the life of me remember the name right now. He was. I love drafting him in Conflux.
There was also...
No, Deadly Reckless was the guy from M10. He's the one with Death Touch and Reach. He's good too. What was the one from Conflux that he was 2-3 with Reach, and then if you control the red permanent, he became a... He got +1/+0 at first strike? Ember Weaver.
We're going to have to talk louder. We're not going to hear you.
We have a special guest, apparently.
He just wandered in.
This is Chris, or Smoker.
You.
Say hi. That's not mine. There we go. So actually, at first I kind of dismissed it, but then the more I thought about it, I thought that could actually be a pretty sweet card. Honestly, I love drafting it, and a 3-3 first strike reach is not absurd. It's not absurd, but it's also not bad. I think in the end, though, we just kind of decided that there weren't going to be enough red permanents to turn him on consistently. I think if you can agree with me.
I'm agreeing with you.
I think that's what we came up with.
When I was playing the little practice with Chris the other night, there was something that I was using that I was wondering why I didn't have any of those in mind, but I can't for the life of me remember what it was. Do you remember the guy who was there?
Zendikar Spider? Was the guy who reached? Explore?
I don't remember. We'll have to look through it, though.
Explore is one in a green for a sorcery. You may play an extra land card this turn, and you get a draw card.
No, it was not. I don't know, but I'll look through it and see if I can remember what it was for next time.
Okay.
But I know it was something. I just thought I'd bring that up for no apparent reason.
No, that's fine.
But it isn't, because I don't even know what it was.
Well, we'll figure it out at some point. So yeah, Lightning Bolt and Bloodbraid Elf were the beginning of the deck, and then... she saw that Bloodbraid Elf was an elf, and saw some other elves, and asked her if she wanted to go with more of an elf sub-theme, which was pretty enthusiastic, yes.
I like elves, because I'm a girl.
Elves are pretty good even if you're not a girl, in Magic, anyway. So, do you remember any of the names of any of the other cards that we got in there?
The ones that we did use?
Right. That ended up making the cut.
There's the three guy who is adorable.
The three guy.
Yeah, he costs 3 trees.
Leatherback Bailiff?
Yeah, I think she's
adorable?
Really cute.
Really?
Yeah, I would ride one of those to work. Heck yeah. There's the lady who's not an elf who has haste.
Rip Clan Crasher.
Yeah, I like
red
that.
Red and green 2/2 haste.
Yeah. Yep. She's cool. I like her words.
Flavor text.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember what it is, but I remember it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't remember what it is either. It's something about killing people, which I can get behind. I think she's got red hair.
She does. Yeah. She is a human berserker.
Right.
Other creatures that made the cut were Nissa's Chosen,
My Wolf!
Obashar's Druid. Ah, yes, Wolfbriar Elemental was a card that was in my white-green deck that I had her playing originally, and she seemed to like it a whole lot.
Very much so.
So we fit some Wolfbriar Elementals in there up at the upper end of the curve. And Goblin Guide, because it's one of the best one of the best aggressive one drops ever printed. It just gets in there for so much damage so fast. There's a little bit of a conflict because so many of the lands are green, and so many of the red ones come into play tapped that it's kind of hard to play a turn one Goblin Guide. There's a little bit of a conflict there, but that might be something that we have to look at when we refine the deck after a little more play experience with it. So then after she had gone through and she had looked through all the creatures and we had talked through them then.
Took like 2 hours.
Play them. It did take a little while, but it's okay. Once you start to learn the cards, it'll get a lot more quicklier. We figured she had about six to eight spell slots left in the deck, and so I suggested, since she liked the elf theme, to go with Nissa Ravain, and because he's just awesome in any green creature deck, Garrick Wildspeaker.
He is pretty awesome.
Garrick is pretty absurd. There are very few cards that I would less like to see come down to the other side of the board when I'm playing against them than Garrick. That guy is an absolute house. So yeah, that's the main gist of the deck. I'm sure we'll get a deck list in the show notes so you can take a look at exactly
what it's on my blog.
Hold on. It is also on her blog, the name of which I can't remember, but I'm sure she can tell you.
It's got a name? I don't know.
I mean the URL. Yeah, oh. So people can find it and
yeah,
see.
It's at empresskiravi.blogspot.com or blogger or whatever they're calling themselves these days.
They changed their name. I'm pretty sure it's Blogspot. Okay, well, it's our Blogspot.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what it is, too. But if you just go to empresskiravi.com, there's, you know, a link to my blog and everything else on there, so.
So we played a bunch of games against some of my other standard decks. It was a little slow going at first because she didn't know what the cards did. You know, just a learning curve thing. But she's really picked it up. I believe she's probably won the majority of games that we've played. The one card that came up in the first couple games that we played that really kind of ruined her day was Lightning. You weren't very much of a fan.
No, not at all.
Most people aren't. It's one
stupid.
Of the most... it's one of the most hated and powerful cards in Standard. When I was playing my silly Cascade deck, that always cascades into either Straxus Spectre, Esper Charm, or Lightning, and just like the first four spells that I played, all cascaded straight into Lightning, and kind of ruined her hand, and it wasn't very fun. But as she got better at it, she started doing better. She beat my Vampires deck, lost my Vampires deck once, and some other ones that we did. Like I said, tonight I threw together that Merfolk deck to try to give her some more creature interaction and interesting blocking situations, because we had discussed that was the one thing that was really throwing you off more than anything.
Yeah, it still is, but...
but I think you picked up some interesting some things about it tonight and learned a little bit better. A couple of the things that came up in our games tonight were things like how badass First Strike is, because I had a couple of Sejiri Merfolk on the board in the first couple turns in one of the games that basically held off her entire invading army just because it wasn't going to be profitable for her to attack. Actually looking at the numbers and trying to figure out all the combat in your head before you actually declare attackers is one of the more difficult things to get a hold of at first, just because there's so many numbers and there are so many variables. We didn't even get into things like combat tricks. This was all just assuming that what was on the board was on the board. But eventually she hit... You hit critical masses of creatures where even though I could First Strike two of them to death and gain like six life because I had a ward on the board, it didn't matter. You were just crushing me to death.
I hit eight guys.
Anyway. yeah. Like, and they just kept going. The one play, I think, was like Blood Braid Elf and the Leatherback Bailoff, and then she had played Nissa the turn before, and so she searched up and chose him, and then tapped an Armory from the Bastwood to make them all bigger, which is pretty disgusting. There were a couple bits that I've reminded her about several times. And again, it's a lot of stuff to take in, so I'm not expecting anybody to get it right away, but do you remember?
There was that guy who makes mana for me.
The Elvish Archdruid.
Imaginary sideways trees. That's a lot to wrap your head around.
Right. Several occasions she was tapping down all of her mana to do stuff. But then she still had other cards in her hand or other things that she could have done. Or, like, she was tapping, for example, an Ornn Reef to make mana, where she could have used it to make bigger guys, and then she attacked me or whatever, and said she was done. And then I was like, well, here's an easier way to do that. And she could have gotten a bunch of extra counters out of the Ornn Reef. Speaking of Ornn Reef...
That was another one, but I think I got a lot better about that pretty quickly.
Yeah, you did. You're better at not forgetting that now. And the other really cool thing about that is its interaction with Garrick, which I think is a thing that you watch out for more often, though, because you can get 2 +1/+1s.
That's pretty awesome.
Out of it, it's a lot better than just a single +1/+1. So yeah, that's the deck. I think you're getting a better hold of it now. Like, are you at the point now where you can just pick up a card and remember what it does without actually reading it, just because you know what the picture is?
Some of them.
Well, like Forest, obviously, I think you figured that one out. But outside of Forest, like Bloodbraid Elf or Nissa's Chosen, do you remember those ones by now? Not the really complicated ones, but just...
Yeah, that... The first one is that I can... she has haste, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she can... I can flip things out until I get one that is less than her. And then I can put it right in for free.
Yep. There you go. Cascade.
And then the other guy, he... When he dies, doesn't go into my graveyard. He goes into the bottom of my library.
Right. And you remember their power and toughness?
Yep.
For the extra bonus points?
Wait. No. He is 2-2.
No.
No?
Ready. He's 2-3.
3?
Yep. Because remember, at first, I couldn't... I played my Merfolk, and then you played that guy, and then I couldn't attack him with my Merfolk. Because
right,
even though my guy had
big.
First strike, because he had too big of a butt.
Yeah.
But anyway, as she continues playing with it, I think it's going to get a lot more smooth. And then, after some more of that, we can start looking at things to change. And sideboard kind of stuff. We'll probably have to build you a sideboard.
We might have to cut it off the pillars because it's getting late.
Yeah, we're totally going to
cut
it off. For, I was already planning on
okay,
that.
Good.
Build you a ghetto sideboard for tomorrow night. Just like throw some naturalizes. And,
but I can't. We have to...
Right. We can put it together and I'll grab the cards before I leave.
I'm scared. I don't want to go.
You'll be fine. Have a couple drinks before you feel a little bit better. I've been telling them I need to
collect. You want me to be, like, pointing like this at magic? I don't think anybody wants that.
She's making nipple fingers. Everybody. I guess that would be finger nipples.
Yeah, nipple fingers sounds better.
It really does. That would be a lot of fun.
No, that'd be gross. You'd have to, like, how would you walk around, though? Because they'd always be... in the way. Anyway, nipple fingers is something I do when I'm drunk.
Yeah, that's... It is, and cry.
I haven't cried in a while, okay?
That is true.
I'll cry at magic because I'll be drunk. I'll be like, I kill your guy, and I'll be like...
so any final thoughts on your deck you want to share before we move on to the next new deck?
I'm enjoying it, but don't tell anyone.
Big secret.
It's a big secret. So far, it is good.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, I think it's good, too. I've been surprised by some of the plays that it made. So, I think it's pretty solid. I think it's going to ruin almost everyone that shows up at our FNM.
I hope you're right.
I wanted to try a game against it with against my Mythic deck, but we didn't really have time if we wanted to. The rest of this, so who knows? Maybe we will meet in the finals tomorrow night.
No, I won't be in the finals.
Grim face. I'm telling you, most of these kids are going to be a little bit. Anyhow, so something that came up the other night when we were playing was it came to the point where I was basically completely dead on board and I had no way out. And I said, at this point, I would normally concede, and it brought up like when you concede, when do you actually give up? When do you keep playing? And that brought up the pretty interesting bit of playing to your outs, which is something that you're going to hear people who both are good and who think they are good or understand things and don't bring up a lot because it makes them sound sophisticated and smart, like they read a lot of Star City articles, like me.
I just remembered the other thing, I think.
Oh, what was it?
It was about not... always blaming your losings on your cards.
Oh,
but will that fit under etiquette?
Well, it's part of it is etiquette. We'll touch on that. The rest of it we might have to put off. But yeah, we'll totally bring that up. But so playing to your outs, it's conceding is an interesting thing because there are legitimate reasons to do it, but usually people do it way too hastily. A lot of high-end respected players will say that they will just never concede because you never know what might happen. I mean, on Magic Online, it's really obvious because your opponent might disconnect, and if you concede, then they would have gotten a win. But now, if they're gone, they don't show back up, you might get a free win out of it. But there are a lot of other reasons. Your opponent might do something really stupid. You might draw the one card in your deck that actually lets you get out of the situation, you know. And that's what playing to your outs means. If you're being able to recognize your board state and know what cards are left in your deck and know what cards your opponent probably has in his deck and being able to think about what you need to do is an important skill that is very difficult to get a hold of. Even if you know that they're, like, say you've still got 45 cards left in your deck, and you're dead next turn if you don't draw that one card. Don't concede, because you might draw that card. Always, you should generally always keep fighting. Another way to think of it is, let's say your opponent, you've got your opponent almost dead, but they've got, like, way, way, way more guys on the board than you. So your only possible way that you could ever win is either they just totally fart and decide not to attack you at all on the next turn. Or, like, you would have to attack with your guys, and they would have to not block, and then you would have to draw a lightning bolt at the beginning of your next turn to finish them off. If that really is the only way that you can do it, then go for that. Even if attacking normally would be stupid, like, even if they have a bunch of guys that will just murder your guys, just attack suicidally. If it's really your only way out, then do it anyway, because they might think that you are crazy, or they might think you have something that they never thought of, and they might panic and be like, and just not block your guys, and then you just got that one, you know, now you're a 1 in a million chance just turned into a 1 in 15 chance that you're going to top deck your lightning bolt.
So should I make very knowing eyebrows in that sort of situation?
That's another thing which is interesting, which is in poker and in Magic, they call that leveling. So, like, you would say that somebody who's level 1 is somebody who just does everything on the surface immediately without really thinking, you know, like, really basic attacks or whatever. You know, they don't, like, hold back combat tricks, you know, it's like, everything is at face value.
Me!
Right. So then level 2 would be the guy who thinks about that kind of stuff and who does things like hold extra worthless lands in their hand and make you think that they have a trick. Or the guy who will, for example, if you, like, remember I was talking tonight about combat tricks, we were talking about lightning bolt, and how in some of those situations, if you would have attacked me, I would have been stupid not to block unless you had a lightning bolt, in which case you would kill, like, 3 of my guys with that one lightning bolt because of the blocks I made.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, a second level thinking would be thinking like that. But then third level thinking would be, you know that I know that, and you know that I know that you attacking would be stupid if you didn't have a lightning bolt, but you don't have a lightning bolt, but you attack anyway.
So that you think I have one.
Exactly. And
gotcha.
Then it becomes a kind of chicken situation where, like, is she faking me out or does she actually have it? And so then you, if you get to the point where you psych me out on that level and I'm thinking below but you're above, then you would say that you've leveled me. Therefore, you
can I just skip that middle ground? Because mind games, you may know, are kind of my thing.
if you can. I mean, as well as you can try to psych people out, all the better, as long as you're not
cheating. I'll just continually try and look like I know what's going on.
There was one time where I oblivion dreamed the guy's curio caps. No reason to it, but it skeeved him out for a good 5 minutes. He sat there looking panickedly at his stuff. He had me dead on board.
You can. I was telling you, there was another one today where... it wasn't today, it was 2 days ago, I was in a tournament, and this guy was playing a Valakut deck, and he had a Hellkite Charger, which is a big flying dragon, and if he pays a bunch of mana, he can attack with it twice. And he also had a Manland, it was the colorless Manland. And I had ripped and played a Sphinx of Drawer Isle, but I was only at 4 life, but I kept some mana back, and I kept a couple worthless lands in my hand. And so, at that point, since I was only at 4, and I only had one creature out, if he would have just attacked with his dragon, and attacked with his land, I could only block one of them, I would have taken 4 damage and died. But I managed to psych him out enough that he didn't do it, and then when it came around to my attack step, I said, well, I already had a Finest Hour on the board, and I was like, well, if I draw Rafik, then I can win. And I drew Rafik, and I played Rafik. And so that meant my Sphinx swung at him for 12, basically. So he had to block it with his dragon, and then I got to attack again for... like almost 20, basically the second time.
Wow.
And I killed him, all because he hesitated, because I psyched him out in some way. And again, that was also, again, I knew my out was drawing Rafik, because otherwise I was just dead. As soon as this guy decided to attack, I was dead. There was nothing I could do about it. So I just had to hope, and it worked out, and I managed to win the game and won the match. But as I said, there are legitimate reasons to concede.
Like last night.
But they're pretty rare. What happened last night?
That terrible deck you were playing against me. Don't you remember?
the one where I gained. I was playing my Master Transmuter deck against her deck, and she damn near killed me twice. She got me to like 4 twice in a row, but then I started doing, Master Transmuter bounces and replace Filigree Angel, gain 20 life, untap her with Tezzeret, do it again, gain another 20 life, and so it was. So basically, at that point, she knew she had no way in her deck to come back from me gaining 40 life a turn. So at that point, we basically just said, all right, it's done. But even in that situation, there are reasons not to proceed, potentially.
Unless you, like, suddenly catch on fire, I don't really see what difference it makes.
But here's the other thing. Say, we're going back to the leveling thing again. You keep just drawing, like, even though it looks like you have absolutely no chance, if you just keep drawing every turn, like, stoically, and be like, go, and just let me keep doing it, it might make me think that you actually do have something in your deck that could potentially stop what I was doing. Might make me second
guess my
kind of
things. That's assuming you didn't help me build it.
Right, again, this is... Right, I know everything that's in your deck, so I know you weren't going anywhere. But assuming that I didn't, you could make... Again, that's a psych-out mind game kind of thing. You could make me think that you do have that one card, and I don't even know what it could be in that situation, but...
But even if I... But what would the point be of that?
Because
you would just keep going and going and going and going, and I would still have no way of actually getting rid of you. We'd just, like, run out of time and cards.
But competitive Magic games are played as matches. So if this isn't game three, if this is either game one or two, then we're going to be playing another game, probably. And during that game, then, I might change my decisions because I think you might have something that would have gotten you out of that situation. Anytime that you're... The less information you can give to your opponent, the better. Whether that means cards that they know you don't have in your deck, cards that they don't know you might have in your deck, anything like that. This is, again, going back to the really basic stuff, this is why generally you attack before you play other spells. Just the less stuff your opponent knows about what you're doing and what you can do, always better.
After lunch.
Oh yeah, that's... I totally forgot about that.
Lunch came up a lot when I was playing with Chris at home.
We were trying to explain to her this concept of not... Generally, you don't play spells until after you attack, unless it's a haste creature or something like that, and it wasn't really getting through until we made the... we made the point of, your attack phase is kind of like your lunch in the middle of the day, so if you don't play your haste creature beforehand, she's already missed lunch, and therefore she won't get to eat. But a creature who doesn't have haste is already full for that turn. He's too lazy to do anything, basically.
So he's
stuffed. He all
need
went
to
Olive
go
Garden
to lunch.
And shit and had the stuffed breadsticks, so it's okay if he misses lunch. That seemed to click. Okay.
I love lunch.
Lunch is, lunch is pretty important. But going back to the less information is better thing, one of the legitimate reasons to concede is because you don't want your opponent to know what you're doing. If the deck that I'm playing right now, Mythic, I killed a guy on turn 4 today.
Oh my god.
And I went first, which means, and his first turn he did nothing but play a land, and his second turn he did nothing but play a Noble Hierarch, and then I killed him before he basically played anything else.
How'd you do that?
You
don't think I'm going to understand,
don't
have to bother.
I went turn 1 Noble Hierarch, who, she's got Exalted, remember we talked about what Exalted is, the one where every creature attacks along with it, so
yeah,
every creature that I attack by itself, she gets +1/+1. She also can tap for either blue, white, or a green mana. Okay, so I played her first turn. Second turn, I tapped the land that I tapped to play her, because now second turn she doesn't have summoning sickness anymore, so I can tap her mana to play a Lotus Cobra. Lotus Cobra is a 2/1, and whenever a land comes into play, you get to add 1 mana to your mana pool with it. Okay? So then I played a Fetch Land. A Fetch Land is the one where it comes into play, and then you can pay 1 life and sacrifice to go get another land. So with Lotus Cobra in play, you're getting 2 mana just from playing the land the first time and then getting the other land coming in. And then you can also tap that land. So I got 3 mana from that, so I played a Rox Warmonk, who's a guy, he's a 3/4 lifelink. So this was all on turn 2, I already had 3 guys.
My goodness.
Okay. Then on turn 3, I untapped, I had another fetch land, I played it again, so now I had 6 mana I could get, and I played an enchantment called Finest Hour. Finest Hour also has Exalted, and it says whenever a creature you control attacks by itself, if it was the first time you attacked that turn, you get to untap that creature, and then you get a whole extra attack phase.
Oh.
So, since the Finest Hour has Exalted, and the Noble Hierarch has Exalted, every time one of my creatures attacks alone, it gets +2/+2. So I attacked with my Rox Warmonk, who is a 3/3, So that made him a 5-6. Then I got to untap him. He hit the guy for 5, knocked him down to 15. Then he gets to attack again. And since he's the only creature I control attacking again, he gets the exalted bonuses again.
Oh no!
So now he was a 7-4. So he swung for another 7. And knocked him down to 8. On turn 3. And then the next turn, I just
did the same thing again?
Right. But so, the interesting thing about that was, since all he did was play a Noble Hierarch, there are at least 3 different decks that play Noble Hierarch in Standard right now. They're like big, meaningful decks. Mine is one of them. Nye is another. There's like green like token decks. And all kinds. There's all kinds of stuff that plays it. So when we went to sideboard, he had seen a good 6-7 cards out of my deck. And since there's only one deck that really plays Finest Hour, he knew basically exactly what I was playing, but I was a total blank on him. So he could bring in exactly the cards that he knew would be fine against me, but I was like almost at a loss. So in that kind of, so even though I just killed him that fast, if you're in the situation where you can tell your opponent's going to kill you and you have basically no chance, but it's going to take 3 or 4 more turns, and you just do blank cards that wouldn't save you anyway, you can just go, okay, I'm done, and you pick up your stuff. And then they don't get to see any of your other cards, so it makes them, they have a much harder time trying to figure out what you are. So not only do they have a harder time figuring out what the sideboard in against you, but also just like play decisions. Like, you know, depending on what deck your opponent is playing, you might want to lightning bolt the first creature they played, or maybe you don't because you know they're going to have a nastier thing that comes down the turn later or whatever. So that kind of stuff can make your opponent make bad decisions, which is always a good thing because it makes it easier for you. The other reason that it's legitimate to concede is Tournament Magic is timed. You have 50 minutes to finish all 3 of your games. Now, on Magic Online, this doesn't matter because you have chess clocks, so each of you has a half an hour. Whoever runs out of time first, no matter what else happens, you lose automatically. But Paper Magic doesn't work that way. When you get to the 50 minutes, you then get to play 5 more turns. At the end of that 5th turn, if nobody won, then it's a draw.
5 more turns? It should be like 1.
Well, it's 5 more total turns. So
okay, it should be like 2.
You get 3 and I get 2. Kind of thing.
That's too long.
But anyway, so if you are in, say, the first game and you're going to lose, and you know you're like 95-99% you're going to lose, but you can tell your opponent isn't going to be able to kill you for another 10 turns, it can make sense to concede right then just to make sure you're going to have enough time to win the 2 games against him to make sure that you don't eat a draw because you wasted too much time. So concealing information and saving time so that you don't get a draw are really the only 2 super legitimate reasons to ever concede in like a tournament setting. But sometimes you just get really pissed off and you're like, and you flip the table or whatever. Don't actually flip the table. And, it'll get you kicked out.
I was pretty excited about flipping tables.
Of most places. So that's playing to your outs and also never conceding. Important thing. I am a hypocrite though because today when I was, so I won that first game against that guy and then the second one was really close but he managed to take me out with a Baneslayer Angel that I couldn't find an answer for, and then the third one he went turn 2 Stoneforge Mystic into turn 3 Basilisk Collar, or into turn 3 Spark Mage. He played the Stoneforge Mystic to get the Basilisk Collar and then on turn 3 dropped a Cunning Spark Mage, which just dismantles my entire deck and there's basically nothing I can do about it, so I just like rage conceded on turn 3. Like I was just so pissed off about it, but do as I say, not as I do. Don't do that. But anyway, so any comments?
I think no. That is a lot of thinking.
It is. I'm telling you, man, this game.
This game has a lot of thinking.
It's deep, man. So the other thing that we wanted to talk about getting on this episode was tournament etiquette. What was your comment exactly on how you couldn't believe that there were so many rules?
No, I can't believe there's so many social intricacies in this game.
Okay.
Because of the people who are playing it, you know, from what I've heard of your descriptions of these people at these tournaments.
Magic players, by and large, are a little bit stunted. And not all of us are, keep in mind. And when I say us, I don't mean me, because I totally am. Don't take that the wrong way, but there are some perfectly well-adjusted people who play this game, believe it or not. But the kind of people that you'll see at PTQs and stuff, a lot of them are pretty neckbeards is a good way to put it, or you know, Asperger's sufferers, or
My mom thinks I found that. She does. You can see it, can't you?
I kind of maybe. It's such like a like I'm not saying it's not legitimate, but it's one of those things like ADD where like it gets diagnosed so much that like when someone says they have it, like I have a very hard time taking it seriously just because it's like the dartboard of disease. Like why can't little Billy make any friends? And the doctor's just like Asperger's. Like it's I think it just gets put out there way 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 too much. But anyway.
But no, I think it would make more sense if it was just like a series of, what did I say to you, a series of grunting and shuffling about.
A series
about.
Of grunting. Why do you need to talk to your opponent at all? You'd think you could just point and grunt.
Yeah, I would think that.
But it doesn't actually work that way. Clear communication is actually
You're like telling me about all these things that people get offended about, and I'm like, oh my god, is this high school?
Alright, well what were some of those things that you can remember?
Well, shuffling... I don't even know all of the things, but everything I brought up, you're like, but I wouldn't really do that. Because,
what about shuffling?
You know, how I have to do it a whole lot, or...
Yeah, at PTQs,
like, I didn't realize that there would be rules for shuffling, for God's sake.
Yes, because otherwise people can cheat. That's how you keep people from cheating.
I mean, like, I can see shuffling it, like, once or twice, but, like, you're, like, 8 times... It's going to take me like 10 minutes.
I'm pretty sure that the floor rules didn't used to have a specific number of times that you were supposed to riffle shuffle. And in fact, they didn't even say that you had to riffle shuffle.
Riffle shuffle is
the one
I've just recently
right, the one that I've been teaching you to
begun
do.
To...
And side shuffling, where you just pick them up and you're like... Also, usually is a decent approximator for riffle shuffling. But you technically, the rule book didn't used to say anything about it until pretty recently, where you could potentially just do nothing but pile shuffle and you would have been within... But they're getting a lot more stringent about it now because it's a lot easier to stack your deck that way. And that is cheating and not fun for the guy you're playing against. So I believe...
Who are those dickheads who pile shuffle your deck every time you get a fun fetch?
Well, the...
They get rotten now. All of them.
They are... You are now forced to shuffle your opponent's deck at... Is it competitive? Whatever. At PTQ or higher level REL, which is rules enforcement level, you are required to shuffle your opponent's deck anytime that they shuffle their deck. This is a change, and probably a good one, but it's really easy to forget. But it was because people were doing... pile shuffle. I don't like pile shuffling in the first
place.
What's
pile shuffling?
Pile shuffling is when you make piles, like you can hear like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and then you start from back from the beginning.
Oh.
You make like 7 piles, and then you just pick it up with it.
Imagine some dickhead doing that to your deck every time you crack a fetch land.
There are speed concerns about it, and if you think that your opponent is taking too long to do that sort of thing, you can call a judge over and ask him to watch for slow play. Usually, I've never actually had anybody pile shuffle my deck every time I did that. It's never happened to me. Did that happen to you with like a 5K or some shit?
A couple times. I think it was
really?
The same guy I ended up playing like on 2 separate occasions. I'd be like, okay, I put my Blitz Hellion back into my deck, and he'd be pile shuffle. Damn it. And I crack a fetch with pile shuffle. Father.
Okay, well that is that's a pretty unique situation. I'd never had that happen to me.
He'd also do it to his deck too, so no matter how much freaking fun that was.
Yeah, pile shuffling takes a lot of time, which is another reason that they try to encourage you not to do it. Like I do it sometimes just to make sure I get rid of items or whatever, but yeah, it's not a big deal. Riffle and side shuffling are really the best way to go. And like I said, I'm pretty sure the floor rules now say 6 to 8 riffle shuffles every time you shuffle your deck. In reality, you're probably going to do it more like 4 to 6 than 6 to 8. And even though your opponent is supposed to do the same back to you, odds are they're probably going to do it 2 to 3 and then cut it and hand it back to you. But it's really not.
But do I have to do that tomorrow?
At FNM, nobody's going to call you. I mean, sometimes my opponents don't even cut my deck at FNM, let alone shuffle it. It's not going to matter. It is a good habit to get into if you're ever going to be at bigger, nastier tournaments. Well, we'll see. Anyway, so shuffling, that was a thing. What else came up that you took?
Oh, good game?
The whole good game debate.
Debacle?
Yeah, has been...
What did he say?
I believe he said something about an ass slap, too.
Oh. Can I do that?
You probably don't want to really go there. But anyway, Good Game has, thanks to the internet, and Battle.net and other internet gaming, good game has kind of got like this sarcastic connotation to
snide,
it these days.
Maybe?
Exactly.
Snide.
Like people like me who, when I was 14, I would sort of rush you to death in like 27 seconds and I'd be like, GG. And then I'd put like a little smiley face because I was a dick when I was a kid, whatever.
Not you.
So now, oh no, I totally was. I was an asshole of StarCraft.
Steve.
Anyway, I was stupid and young. But anyhow, so.
I've never been a jerk. Ever.
Yeah. But so now, some people will take offense to you if you say good game because, well, there's two reasons. Some people just think that now you don't actually mean good game, even if you do actually mean good game. They think you're just being, like, you know, a dick about it. Or other people will rather, like, to me, good game doesn't actually mean good game. It's just, like, a thing. Like, when you see somebody in the hallway and you go, hey, how's it going? Like,
you don't really care.
Right, you're not actually asking them how it's going. It's just a thing that you say. Like, good game is just a polite thing to say to somebody after you finish, you know, playing a game with them, whatever. But some people take it literally, and if they get screwed or flooded or, you know, you just, like, win the Cascade Lottery, or even if you don't actually do those things and they just think that that's what happened, and you say good game, then they'll get all pissy because they're like, oh, it wasn't actually a good game because I couldn't actually do, you know, anything, whatever. And they do have a point. Like, I understand. It can be
But it's just something to say. I don't really care how they feel, right?
Well, right, but first of all, you don't really want that reputation. And second of all, if you're like me, it makes you incredibly uncomfortable when somebody...
What about if I were to specifically compliment something great that they did? Be like, hey, I really like the way you did that thing. That was great.
It's like the compliment sandwich.
Yeah, but...
but, good game. I don't know. I've never tried that. That would be an interesting tack to give a go at. But so, generally, this is what I do, and this seems to be kind of the accepted-ish... this is like the zeitgeist now. Like, this is what you're supposed to do is to not accidentally piss anybody off. If you win...
Just don't look them in the eye.
Don't say good game to the guy unless they say it to you first. Also, don't stick your hand out to them to shake it unless they do it first. Because otherwise, it can be construed as if you're being cocky. So what I...
So I should smack him in the face, yeah?
What I... Sometimes you'll want to. What I normally do in these situations now is, I like, if they legitimately got screwed or whatever, I will oftentimes say, like, you know, I'm sorry, you know, you didn't draw your third land or whatever, that sucks. I would have liked to have, like, a more, you know, because then you're empathizing with them, and therefore they won't be as pissed off. They might
be
pissed off.
See, I don't know. I think that would make me more angry, honestly.
Really?
Because
I've never had anybody react poorly to that.
All right, well, maybe it's just me, then.
That's what I do. Other people say what you should say instead of good game is thanks for the game, because then you're not making any sort of value judgment on how the game actually went. It was just, you know, like, thanks for... It's also kind of like a preemptive thanks for not being a cock nozzle about getting screwed and, like, making a big scene about it or whatever. You know, if you come to somebody with that right away, don't actually call them. Don't actually say cock nozzle. You'll probably ruin the whole effect. So you do that, and that kind of like...
The mental image that brings to my mind is worth it.
So that kind of like preemptively like cuts short their feud, you know what I mean? Like
you can't be a jerk because I already thanked you for not being a jerk?
Right, kind of, yeah. And then it makes them feel like a double jerk if they are, you know? And nobody wants to be, well, I guess some people want to be a double jerk, but most people don't. So that's the way that I generally go about it. If you lose... if I lose and it actually was a good game, I will always say good game and extend my hand, unless the guy has, again, been a complete cop nozzle, in which case, you know, I'm just like, whatever, I shuffle up my shit and leave. But,
can I be like, oh man, you better be glad I sucked today? Can I say that?
That could also be construed as kind of a dicky thing to say.
So what I am is a study in things not to say to your opponent.
Basically.
You gotta be a dick, you should be dick early on so they get angry.
That's... Putting your opponent on tilt is a semi-legitimate strategy.
Can I wear a boob shirt?
That I'm that could seriously work for real. I'm not even joking.
They're pretty nice.
Trying to drive up that web traffic.
Yes.
The that could totally work, and it would I mean, there is, you can get penalized for unsportsmanlike conduct or something.
Are you sure it's unsportsmanlike?
I don't think.
What if I showed up in a bikini?
It's all up to the judge's discretion at that point, honestly.
In costume.
I that's up to judges. Maybe we could ask some judges what they think they would do about that. I think most of them wouldn't care, but some. Most judges are actually really cool guys. A couple of them can be pretty uptight.
Like that stupid guy at Games Day made us take our shirts off.
Kind of, yeah. That was a little tangential, but there are some people who act like that. Like there was this. Like most of the tournaments I go to around here are run by Grey Matter, and most of the judges at the Grey Matter conventions are pretty cool dudes. But this one time, like one of the, I forget if it was a 5K or it was a PTQ or whatever, but one of them I went to, there was this guy there who I'd never seen before, and he was just like he had his hair like cropped really short, and he was like kind of tall and like super wiry, and he was like had like the hair that he did have was like bright red, and he was just like one of those dudes who just like looked around. Like, somebody was about to stab him at any second. Like, he was just super intense and, like, never cracked a smile.
I don't see really, what red hair really had to do with that, Steve.
It was like, he was just, like, a shocking guy. You know what I mean? Like, he was very there. Like, there
intense.
Was no... Yeah.
Like, what intense Kyle face?
Guy that was running around screaming at them at one time. There was a short judge at the one, I forget which event it was, but he was just running around screaming at people and walking around angrily with stiff legs.
That one's not ringing a bell, but I'm not saying it didn't happen, it just
every time he came out, he better dive out of the way, he just sort of brought your shoulder pass.
We actually might be talking about the same guy.
Well, I thought there was a short guy. I remember being a short, angry man.
Alright, maybe we're not then. I don't know.
He's very yelly.
Like me?
No, you just sort of
like that episode of The Simpsons where Homer's in the hotel and he's wearing that shirt that Marge made for him, but it got all smudged, and then the guy's running the floor buffing his son. And he screams and runs out of the room. But so yeah, I imagine that would be like if people were feeling weird about it, they would tell the judge, and then the judge would probably go to the head judge, and then he'd be like, man, what do you think?
Or if I showed up drunk and was doing finger nipples.
You actually, there is also now in the floor rules a provision about not being, they can kick you out immediately if you were intoxicated.
They just told me to come intoxicated.
FNM doesn't, like, FNM is like tournaments late. Like, FNM is to
practice
real tournaments. Like, my analogies aren't good analogies. In that
okay.
They're not very.
Okay.
Yeah. So I wouldn't worry about that, but. No, for big ones, you can't do that.
No nipple fingers?
No. Well, yeah, I'm sure you can do. Well, one day, you probably can do nipple fingers. You just can be drunk and do nipple fingers. Or you can be drunk and they just don't let them know, or whatever.
Because I could totally do that. Nobody ever knows when I'm drunk.
I fight at least one out-of-his-mind stone guy every time I go to one of these.
Right, well, that is true, actually. I'm just telling you what the four rules say. I mean, they could definitely legitimately kick you out for it. Judges have models on that sort of thing.
Now, by the way, I kept telling my opponent that I could totally drive home right now.
So, from not being a jerk and
not that I would ever actually drive drunk. I just talk about it a lot when I'm drunk.
This will all be cut out. The other thing was...
I think you should keep it.
Another thing that came up that was interesting was people who bitch a lot. Like, in the previous example, we were talking about somebody who, complains that you just got lucky or, they got screwed or whatever. This is actually interesting in two ways. First of all, you don't want to be that guy who always blames something else. You don't want to be the guy who tells the guy who just crushed him that, they just got lucky. First of all, that's incredibly rude.
That's insulting.
And insulting. And that's just, like, a totally dick move in basically every facet. Now, later on, like, I'm sure Smoker can tell you how many times I've lost a round to somebody and, like, they're, he's outside smoking and I'd rather talk to him. And I'm like, that son of a bitch does not deserve to win that game at all. I want to tear his throat out and punch him in the dick until he starts bleeding from his scrotum. And that's fine. Just don't actually say it to him. Because, you know, it's different. One is just, you know, like raging to blow off steam.
Can I do it on my blog or Twitter it?
Sure. Most people probably aren't. It's just, you know, you want to hold some sort of decorum while you're actually face-to-face with the guy. First of all, because it'll make everyone else around you uncomfortable. Second of all, because you don't want their reputation. And third of all, because, again, you can get in trouble for being unsportsmanlike. And at a certain point, I'm sure you cross over into unsportsmanlike when you really get into it on that. But the other interesting thing about that is this is an extension of blaming things other than yourself for being bad at magic, which is a hole into which you don't want to fall.
It was all the trees, though, the florists, because I was calling them that evening.
What brought this up was Kira had her first... well, go ahead. Why don't you explain it?
I was playing a little game against Chris at home the other night because I had left my magics at Steve's house, and I got, like, 8 trees in a row and nothing else, and I couldn't do anything, and it was really bad and terrible, and I hope it never happens again.
Right.
The end.
It will.
It will. But so I explained to her the concept of Mana Screw and Mana Flood and how sometimes they just happen, but also that you don't want to always blame your losses on them, because even though invariably some of them will be because your deck just wasn't cooperating, the way that you continue to get better at this game is by owning up to things that you messed up. And if there's always another scapegoat there, you're never going to actually take responsibility for things that you did incorrectly.
But when it is the tree's fault...
When it is... Here's an interesting trick. When it is the fact that you just drew 7 lands in a row, if you would have won if you didn't draw 7 lands in a row...
Well, I don't know.
That could be true, but at the same time, you almost certainly screwed up something in that game. There's never been a perfect game of Magic ever played, basically, is the line that most people go with.
But, like, I got one guy out, Steve.
Right.
One. There wasn't anything else I could do in any situation.
Well, then maybe you should have mulliganed better. And that was the mistake that you made, was you didn't mulligan properly. Even if you would have lost regardless, there's almost always something that you screwed up. So, instead of blaming things that you couldn't control and just be like, oh, not my fault. Instead, you should look for the thing that you did wrong and try to focus on it so that you don't do it wrong again. Because even if it was the screw or the flood or the whatever, if that was the case, that's still not going to make you any better. Where if instead you take being angry that you lost and you use that as fuel for trying to determine things that you did incorrectly, you can actively make yourself better. So that's why, generally, the wisdom is don't. You know, always look for things that you did wrong rather than trying to blame the deck or luck or your opponent or the shuffler on Modo, which people blame that thing. Like, it's absurd how many, like, we've had random number generators on computers as long as we've had computers. Like, it's not like they just got together and, like, wrote this thing drunk on a Saturday night because they had to get it out the door. Like, it's just a random number generator. It's not biased against you. It doesn't screw you over. It doesn't give you 7 lands in a row when you're in the finals on purpose. That's just the way the shit falls. And nothing you ever do is ever going to stop that from happening. So instead, you focus on the stuff that you can stop from happening.
I have a side question about that. Why do they call it by those letters?
What?
Modo.
The original, when the game first came out, version 1, it was called Magic Online with Digital Objects, and the name of the executable was like Modo. It was like M-O-D-O.
Digital Objects?
Yeah.
How old is that?
It is kind of clunky
this?
And
like
weird.
1994?
I think what they were trying to get across was that you would actually have like an entire virtual collection that was separate from your paper collection. Like, it wasn't you, like, bought the game and then you had access to every card. You know what I mean? Like, it was something where you you still. I think that was their initial intention.
Well, it was silly.
It got dropped pretty quickly, but the Modo thing kind of just stuck.
Digital object cards.
Yeah, magical online with digital objects.
I think it should be more like a scan card thing, where if you have it, you can, in real life, you can, like, scan it.
Unfortunately, that doesn't really make Wizards of the Coast money.
Well.
And it also leads to other problems, like...
I've told you, this is nothing but a big money-making scheme.
No shit. You really think a corporation is trying to make money off of the thing?
They should also just genuinely care about people having a good time.
I'm sure they do. The sets that they've made for the last 4 or 5 years are substantially better than the game before them. Magic hasn't had a bad set in almost 5 years at this point. But anyway, where was I going with this? Oh yeah, also if you did it that way, you would have the problem of, for example, I have four copies of basically every card in Standard. So I would scan all my cards
and sell them.
And, or I could sell them after that, or I could then give them to him, and then he could scan them all in, and then
they'd have unique cards. Like, they'd have unique keys.
Well, see, that's a whole other... That would be such a pain. That would be such a pain in the ass. Yeah. That wasn't a fart.
No.
Legitimately, it was much of it. So, were there any other turn? I know. Were there any other things that you can think of off the top of your head that came up?
Should I warn everybody that I suck before I start playing?
Probably. I mean, again, at FNM, since it's more laid back, that probably wouldn't be a big deal. I don't do that usually. Although, if I'm playing on Modo and I'm drunk, I will generally tell people, hey, I'm pretty drunk.
So they're not going to kick you out of digital objects if you're drunk?
No. Actually, I don't think that's a part of Modo. That you're not allowed to be intoxicated.
Well, you
I should hope
naked,
not.
So that's.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, again, it's people, since they haven't seen you there, and I'm sure people are going to be there, and you're going to have to, get a DCI card tomorrow, too. And so people will see you getting your DCI cards there and know you can move them anyway. But I mean, if you want to just give a quick look, hey, I'm new at this,
eyes.
So like,
I might take a couple seconds
to figure something out, or like, you know. I might ask you some questions about what things do, because I don't know all the cards. Like, that would be fine.
Bobby had a hat.
Bobby has several hats. I don't know if he had a reporter hat.
He had a press card.
He had that big hat.
Yeah. That could work.
Good. Alright, so anything else that you can think of that we were talking about at the tournament?
What's this card business?
Etiquette stuff. I'm sorry?
Are they going to need, like, my information?
It's just like your name and address. I think it asks you for your phone number, and then you're registered in the system.
I don't want to be part of the system.
Oh, but you will be.
No!
And then,
people will know.
You can sign up for player rewards.
Do I have to pay for that?
Pretty sweet cards? Hell no. But it keeps track of your rating. And
my rating is zero.
Nope, your rating is 1600. It's like chess. You start at 1600. And then the points that you get are based off both the K value of the tournament. FNM, I think, is only an 8. It's like the lowest it can possibly go, which means if your rating is 32 million and you lose to a guy whose rating is 2, you still only lose 8 points. The K value is the absolute maximum number of points that you can win or gain from any given match, which means when I go to FNM and I lose like 7.75 points. But yeah, so people will probably be able to catch on to the fact that you're pretty new. But most of them, again, are also pretty new.
Mostly by my L fingers.
That's L, the guy from Death Note, by the way. Not that she's making, doing like the forehead thing. I think we're going to wrap it up there for now.
Because I have to go to bed because I'm an old lady.
Yeah, I'm also an old man and I also have to get to bed. 10:46, son of a bitch.
No!
I'm
going to get delayed again, bed.
So, Kira's homework assignment for this week is to go to FNM tomorrow and have a good time.
Well, I can't promise you any good times.
No, you totally will. I also had down here as your homework assignment practice shuffling, but you have made serious strides in the shuffling department, so I think you should still keep up on it, but it's not as
imperative. It's relaxing.
I know, right? Remember, like, a year ago when I first started playing again, and we'd be sitting around watching TV or whatever, and I'd just,
like,
shuffle the deck the whole
that.
Time?
Yeah, I
and
do.
You guys would be like, what the hell is wrong with you? And I'm like, it helps me center myself, and you're all like, whatever, and now you see that it is totally true. But anyway, so yeah, your homework assignment is to go to FNM. We will report on that next time and see how it goes after your scary encounters with the
people.
With the people who aren't me.
So what about the high school kids? Are they like typical magic guys, or are they just typical high school guys? Or a combination therein?
Kind of a combination. Most of them are on the bowling team, so that should give you an idea, I know, for real. The ones who aren't on the bowling team are pretty gothy. So I know, right?
Yeah, I love exactly. Goth boys.
I know.
Oh man, I'm going to be like a cougar up in magic. Oh god. You know what? Maybe I shouldn't go after all.
No, you'll be there. You'll have
I'll be like, time. Hey there, 15-year-old boy. So
I think they're mostly 16 and 17.
It doesn't matter, Steve. I think it's 8 years to be a cougar. I think we looked it up at work once.
Isn't it half your age plus seven?
It's not what I was
not legal feelings.
Hey. Boys.
Oh, man. They're so hot. To be fair, I was younger when that show came out.
It's true.
It's true. I keep getting older, but they stay the same.
They stay the same age. Yep. Okay, so I think that's the end of this episode. Hopefully you're enjoying it. Hopefully we're not rambling too much for y'all's tastes. Hopefully you're learning something too. Or maybe you're just pointing this to somebody who is really bad at magic and you hope they don't.
But you can give us some comments
feedback.
Or if you want to hear us ramble more.
We can ramble our asses off, man. You have this is like nothing compared to what we could do if we were really trying.
In fact, when we've covered all parts of magic, we might just turn this into a
ramble
podcast
show.
Of absolutely fucking nothing. Like
yep.
Seinfeld, only funnier. Or actually funny.
Anyway, you can... Ow. You
stop
can get
a
hold
him.
Of... Well, you can get a hold of either one of us by emailing pursuitofknowledgepodcast@gmail.com.
That's long.
It is. I know. Well, somebody took Pursuit of Knowledge. Remember, we've been over this.
I know. I'm just saying.
Stupid people taking my aim handles. Anyway, pursuitofknowledgepodcast@gmail.com. You could also respond in the comments here on MTGcast in the comments section. I'm being shot by a mace.
And not the spray kind.
Can follow me on Twitter. My name is Procrastinarian. You can check out my blog. It is www.buttailments.com. I've started posting more magic stuff.
It's not as gross as you think.
It's not as gross as it sounds. I've been posting more and more magic things there. Right now, I've got up Rise of the Eldrazi review/ cards that I think are neat.
By more and more, you mean three things in the
some
last...
Other stuff. Right. Well, three
4
things.
Months.
Yeah, but two things in today. So there you go. And you can also find me on AIM. Names are Butt Ailments or Jungle of Peenies. Spelled both just like they sound. Kira, your contact stuff?
I'm Empress Kira V with a Y. Kira with a Y, that is. Just about everywhere. I mean, like I said, I have EmpressKiraV.com, and on it links to, my Twitter and my blog, and I'm pretty easy to find because I use the same thing everywhere. Totally comment and stuff because I feed on other people's praise and attention.
Okay, so I think that's the end. We'll get back to you sometime in the near future with a tournament report from Kira. She can let you know about all the cute goth boys she destroyed with her elves.
That'll be zero.
And hope you join us next time. Peace.
Play why it tips them away. Mystery if you draw the comfort of our curiosity. But here we are, rooted in the present day. Rooted in the present day. Questions have to seem just alike. A testament of